Heavenly Father, I want to thank you again for this day and all your blessings. Thank you for the privilege of being able to work with you and for you to talk about some more technical aspects, guide and direct us to the system, and allow us to be better to use our time. There's a few things by way of review again, and some other things I want to cover before I do that. I want to ask the question I asked last night in terms of what you want to make sure we cover. I know you missed the first night, and we're going to overlap some of that tonight, so I think I'll cover some of that. Tomorrow night, as I mentioned, the vendor's going to come down. Basically, he's going to do his little spiel about what they can do. But we're both in agreement, I know I've said this before, but no one's trying to sell you anything that they can sell it to. The main objective there, he understands that these aren't, you're not coming in here a big mega church and you've got your media department whose budget has been approved, you know, it's just small churches. He said he has actually worked with several Adventist churches, so he's somewhat familiar. He lives in Burleson, like I said, so he's going to make his presentation. He may ask you guys a few questions before you come. I told him that, you know, you're going to be full of questions. And I want to spend a little time tonight kind of talking with you to sort of making sure you're going to get the most out of the time here. And the reason I'm bringing this particular vendor is I'm a big fan of being loyal to one. When you find a good one, be loyal to you. Sometimes it's a little more expensive than something else, but in the long run, you end up being cheaper. And we're going to talk a little bit about a couple areas that don't cut corners in these particular areas. And he'll probably reiterate that. And that's one of the reasons I'll probably mention it again tomorrow night, but while he's present, so he knows I communicated that. Because he's pretty sensitive about, and it's one of the reasons I like this company. I don't really care for hard sell techniques anyway. You know, he's going to tell you don't cut corners in these areas, and they obviously benefit him, but he really believes that. So, and we'll touch on that. So tomorrow night, he's come down. It's going to be question. And then, particularly since the first class, this class was formed basically out of a desire for the communication department to provide a service. And, you know, in the end, we don't really make any money or anything like that. But, and so we intend to offer it on an ongoing basis and expand it. And then, as I've already mentioned to you, our intention, let's just talk a little more with Randy last night about it. We intend to shoot a complete series of training videos that churches will be able to subscribe to. Just, you know, a nominal fee. We're going to look for the vendor. That's one of the reasons I was up there, that they may sponsor it, you know, and help keep the cost down, that type of thing. But the goal would be is that one will provide a regular report, if you will, of the evolving technology, kind of with the small church in mind. So like you were just saying, well, I know I need a computer. Well, literally, maybe tomorrow they announce a big thing, this little $200 box that does this and does the encoding, and you just connect it in, and that's all you need, kind of thing. You know, it's that kind of stuff that's happening so fast. And by the way, kind of an aside, there's a podcast, it's about 2-3 minutes, I think I might have mentioned a little bit the other night. This couple wanted to do a podcast, and they wanted to get it going successful enough where they quit their jobs and do that full time. In 3 months, they pulled it off. Now, they're not making a killing. And they live up, I think, in Allen or Addison or somewhere up, or Plano, I think, is where they live. They use the laundry room for the audio. They have some place in their apartment, you know. But what she does, she's the on-camera person, and it's only like 2-3 minutes long. You can put it on the Apple iTunes for free, which is what they've done. And then they have a pretty extensive, I've seen her on CNN, seen her on, you know, kind of as the expert. What she does, she goes on the internet every day and researches technology. And most of it's gadgetry stuff, but I'm not sure how they decide what they pick, because it's kind of a mixture. But they've got, like, a Nokia sponsors them, there's some hard drive thing that sponsors them, and there's a couple other things. Just a small, homespun kind of thing. And they're making a living doing that. I think it's pretty cool.
Excuse me, do we know what is the name, or can we see some of their work?
It's Geek Brief, G-E-E-K,
okay.
B-R-I-E-F. In fact, we're going to be looking at some podcasts tonight, and I'll pull
okay.
that one for you. A lot of these, of course, are commercial, but you can kind of see the production value and how kind of simple. Because the other thing, we're kind of assuming, of course, that there isn't this giant media department. You know, it might be you and one of your kids, or, you know, someone else's kids that's kind of into media, and you kind of got to make it all work. And that's one of the reasons I kind of showed you the YouTube thing from that. You know, this guy is a pastor of a pretty big church. He's kind of done this thing, and it seemed to have got some pretty good response, and it's really holding the video. It's really all it is. So I think... I showed you that, and we'll talk about more about it when we look at some specific podcasts. That's kind of an example where, in the right context, that's appropriate. You know, you don't have to do all these big production things, and the web kind of gives you some of those flexibility. You know, if you put that on a television, you sat down and turned on your TV and saw that, you would think, wow, that's really awful. When it's in that context, your expectations and what you're expecting to experience are different. And those kind of things have a lot to do in terms of deciding what kind of quality and so on and so forth. Getting back to one of the things, since you guys have sort of been the first ones, we want to extend, especially since we don't have that podcast thing in place and stuff like that. When we do, we'll kind of offer that to you free for several months. I talked to Randy about this yesterday, and I might be able to kind of hook you up with the thing, or I'll come out, and we actually come out to your church and help you look over some stuff at Noah. Because we'd like to really see it work and make sure what we're creating is actually helpful.
That's the point.
Yeah. So that's the bottom line, that's not rocket science, but it's amazing how hard it is to find sometimes that simple information. And the vendor, by the way, is very excited about being involved. Obviously, they feel like they can help their business. And with us, we've probably bought about $1 million worth of food and different people I've worked with. And they've always been fair. In most cases, they're either equal to the cheapest I could find, or very, very competitive. When I count in all the stuff they've given me, oh, you can take this table or that, you know, then it's definitely cheaper. And more importantly, when they don't do something right, because none of them do it all right, they've always been great about fixing it. So, this kind of example, see the stand there? We ordered a stand, and there was a little problem with the order. Mm-hmm. And this is one they had, it's open. He has all the boxes and everything. He could have packed it up and sold it to me, and I'd never known it wasn't. Open, you know, he just comes out and says, here, I need you to see something, this is open, I can order you another one, you know, blah, blah, or I'll tell you what, I'll give you a discount, right? You know, we'll take it, because it looks fine, I don't see any significant scratches, and so that's what we need. So that's kind of the way that it works, so I appreciate it. So I just kind of wanted to start out by talking about kind of, again, where the class came from, and with you guys, how we kind of intend to kind of walk with you a little more than we probably could regularly provide everybody. But we're hoping with the podcast, with all that training and ongoing thing, there's two things basically we're going to want to provide. One, kind of some kind of regular, probably initially be quarterly, but we'll specifically pick technical things that, you know, here's some development in podcasting. Here's some new development in speakers and mixers and stuff, but kind of focus not on the big mega church type of thing, but just kind of in the medium range. And so as you're thinking about expanding, also we're going to be looking at talking with the vendor, looking to get some interviews with people who have done a lot of installations in large and small churches. And, you know, those little tips, you know, like, well, once you get your mixer in, your things in, you know, then here's some other things you start looking for, that kind of thing. That's one thing, that just kind of quarterly on that. The other is we'll build this library of that is intended, that you get a new volunteer that walks in your church. Just go to this place right here. I want you to sit down. There's this little quiz, and you're going to see the quiz. You see they got it right. Okay, so they know that this is a mixing board. This is loud. This is soft. You know, I mean, just the basic stuff. Because no one has the media department kind of thing that you can really do the training. We always do more. So that's kind of the one where we're heading with that. Before I move on tonight, then, I want to ask the question again. Is there something specific you want to make sure we cover before we're done? I know you want to get into the audio because you missed some of that. We'll do some of that.
No, just if we can. We talked about this some last night, but we can just film some stuff.
Yep.
Okay. We can do that.
Okay. And then we'll go through the whole process of putting into the computer. Has everyone burned a DVD, gone through that process? Yes, sort of? Okay. We'll take it through the camera and we'll look at some of the options. And, how about editing? Have you guys done much editing?
Not at all.
You want to see some of that? Okay. We'll definitely show some of that. We'll have some. That's my favorite part, so we can definitely do that. Let's review a little bit of audio, and then I've kind of got it set up to where we can just do some simple voice things. And, you know, we talked about EQ, and you remember what I said. It's like we talked about some basic principles, but ultimately audio is a very subjective thing. You bring in one engineer that's been doing all this big job, and they'll say it sounds awful. You bring in the next one, they say it sounds great. You know, it's really about listening. And as we've also talked about, you know, someone will come in with some singing group, and they present themselves like they know everything, and they kind of assume you don't know anything. And sometimes that may be true, but, you know, they mess with your board, and then it's never sounded right since they, you know, arrived. So trying to touch on some of those things. So in the context of listening, I'm just going to play some of those clips I played the first night and by way of review, and then we're going to play on this mixer. Now, remember when we talked about the sound wave, the loudness, the technical term is amplitude. So when I'm talking now, there's a lot of amplitude when I'm talking about an example of amplitude.
Let's turn now to the topics of sound signals and studio acoustics. First, we'll demonstrate amplitude. This is a high amplitude signal. It has a relatively high voltage. This is a low amplitude signal. It has a relatively
low. Now remember, that's kind of equivalent. You throw a big rock in the pond, you see the ripples, you see big waves, and it's going to go out farther than a small rock. You know, small rock. Basic idea. Here's frequency.
Now, let's demonstrate frequency, also known as cycles per second, or hertz. Here is a mid-frequency tone of 500 hertz. Here is a low-frequency tone of 50 hertz. Here is a high-frequency tone of 10,000 hertz. As we just heard, low frequencies have a low pitch, and high frequencies have a high pitch. Next, we'll demonstrate harmonics. This is the sound of it.
All right. Again, we're trying to not get into unnecessary technology, but remember, the wave, got a line here, the wave goes up and down. The faster that goes up and down, because it essentially has to go up and down, that's kind of the cycle, so to speak. It has to go up and down, and the faster it goes up and down, that's the higher the frequency. And you remember now what happens if this happens?
Cancel.
And when something's out of phase, what happens? It cancels it out. Now, in the purest sense, and I've heard this done actually, you can actually literally make it go away. Like you don't hear anything. I think I mentioned, you know, like the Porsche, for a while there, I don't know if they still do, they were using kind of a phase thing to try and make inside the car quieter, where they literally were taking the sound and trying to play it back in the room. I don't remember how well it worked, but since I didn't really have the budget to buy a Porsche, but that's phase. Now, what you remember how some that can, how you can get that in a practical application. If you stand someone up in front of a microphone, and then they're holding a guitar, and they put the mic down at the guitar, the microphone for the voice, and this would probably mostly be true if it's not close enough, or it's, you know, you've turned it way up too much. So it's catching some of the audio from the guitar and then the vocal. It actually could make the guitar sound muffled. Now, I mean, it's kind of obvious when you just see it drawn on a board that, oh, well, if this is exactly like this, then it we can say this is what it does. But in a situation like that, you know, it isn't like it exactly is out of phase, but it's close enough to where it muffles it. And it's kind of really bad phase, it'll, like I said, it sounds like they're talking in a tube. That's when you can when it's really bad. It just sounds. Now, the next aspect, one of the reasons it doesn't totally cancel it out is if you remember harmonics, there's two aspects to sound. There's many, but two basic aspects that really define whether this frequency sounds like a saxophone or it sounds like a trumpet. Because remember, we're just listening to one pure frequency. When you play a trumpet or you play a saxophone, there's all these layers of frequencies combining, or harmonics. And then the second aspect is the envelope. Remember what the envelope is? Is that that's how fast it goes up, how far it goes up, how long it sustains, and when it comes back down. And the only reason you really need to get into that kind of stuff is when you start talking about reverb, or remember we talked a little bit about compressors, and I'll come back to that again. Some of just knowing that that's what's going on, it helps you understand more what you're doing. Or when you're working in the EQ, then you know, well, since a saxophone isn't just one frequency like we were just hearing, it's several. When you go to EQ and you're adjusting the lower frequencies, mid, highs, you kind of understand that you're affecting the whole layer, if you will, or the whole complete sound. It's not just one frequency. Okay, let's listen to the harmonics here a little bit.
Next, we'll demonstrate harmonics. This is the sound of a pure sine wave at 500 Hz. Here are several instruments, each playing the same note, but they have different harmonics and different envelopes, so they sound different.
Someone hear that? Oh, yeah, that's pretty short. I'm going to jump down in a second to something we didn't play the other night, but this would be a good point to bring it up, and that's reason.
The sound of my voice, you have short deliberation. In real time, it's 1.5 seconds. It sounds like this. Test. 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 This is the sound of my voice with long deliberation. The reverb time is 2 seconds, and it sounds like this. Test. 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 This is the sound of my voice with medium reverberation, and 100 milliseconds of pre-delay. There's a delay of 100 milliseconds before the reverb starts. Test. 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 This is the sound of my voice with pre-delay. Notice how the reverb precedes every word I say, and it sounds like this. Test.
Test. Oh, you're just going to go out there and do that in your church, aren't you? They're going to thank you if something's weird going on there, man. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that, but one of the common mistakes of someone that's new to mixing or audio stuff is they love reverb. And one of the nice things that reverb does, like these are, you know, you hear his voice and he sounds like he's in a big cathedral or whatever. You know, you obviously don't want to be doing that because it's not going to sound real and just draw attention to that sound. However, one of the things reverb can do is, you know, you have the mic and you hear the voice is going to sound very present. It's just kind of right there. If you add just a little reverb, it just kind of has a tendency to expand the sound. But if you put too much, then you're going back to the problem we were talking about the other night. This just starts getting muddy. Because, well, you can hear those extremes where it's wah, 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 wah. You know, if it takes that long to get that note out and you've already gone on to the next note, you've got a mess. You know? So, but, and one of the things, like you're talking about upgrading the board, there's a good chance buying a small digital board may make sense for you. And the relevance of that to this discussion right now is a lot of the digital boards have that stuff built in, which is one of the reasons it might be a good fit for you. As opposed to having to buy all this other outside gear, you can access some of those things. And when you know what it does, and when you understand like the frequencies and the attack stuff, you at least have, you don't have to be an expert, as long as you just kind of know, you know, when you put the key in the car, you may know a lot how a car works or a little, but you have a basic idea of what's going on. Well, it's the same kind of idea. If you have the basic idea of what's going on, number one, remember I said, keep the levels down. Don't keep pushing them up. The classic problem, people are raising the levels up here, they're raising the levels there, they're raising them over here, all the different places. You set the level on the trim, make sure you've got a good solid signal, and then the rest is just slide adjustments. That's one common problem. Others, when they get access to some other things like reverb, they just start cranking it up and putting all this stuff. And it's almost like a little kid, you know, when they want to run the model train, they want to run it full bore, you know, that kind of thing. So it's just really moderation, because ultimately what happens is, you know, it starts, whether it's reverb or it's too loud or something, it just starts echoing, and you start getting sound bouncing everywhere. And then, even if you're not an expert, you say, well, you know, it's loud, or there's enough volume, but why can't I quite, like, you know, I can't hear it real, you know, what, you know, subconsciously it's distracting, and sometimes very consciously when it feeds back. But the other night I didn't play reverberation, I just kind of want to touch on that. Let me come back up to compression. Now remember what compression does. Again, coming back to this attack, and we'll listen to it, is that compression can adjust the threshold, which if you remember what that means is you tell it what frequency it's going to start doing something. That's basically what the threshold is. And then you can tell it how fast you want it to do it. and then how long you want it to keep doing. So there's kind of those three parameters, and if you remember, one of the basic reasons or uses for compression is it's kind of an automatic volume control at those points that, you know, you can't be controlling. If a trumpet's going up and it also hits this high note, you can't suddenly be jumping over the mixer and cut it down. Now remember, the other thing I mentioned the other night is on the mixers, if you're doing this during the mix, there's a problem. Because they're rarely, even complex mixes, you're not doing this. You might notice that when the singers are getting to a louder note, maybe someone's maybe not quite in key, or they get louder, so you just bring them down a little bit. But I see this so often, people are like sitting over the board, and they're moving all this stuff. You rarely need to be doing that. And one of the things the compressor does in those areas, yeah, that trumpet, when it goes high, it starts hurting a little bit. The compressor will just, at a certain point, bring it down. So let me play the compression here again.
Another type of signal processing is compression. A compressor reduces the dynamic range by automatically turning down loud notes. Here's a bass guitar track with no compression. With a fast attack time, about 1 millisecond. Notice how the attacks of the bass are softer. Now here's the same passage with the compressor attack time set to 20 milliseconds. Notice how the attack or pluck of the bass comes through, but the bass notes are compressed.
Perhaps a more relevant application of what you're hearing, I noticed when the second one that we talked about before, you can hear the complete clock, but then it doesn't quite fit. And you also notice it's real subtle. It's not like you suddenly notice this huge compression. But a more practical application is a speaker, someone that's speaking. You know, sometimes how they're talking and they may get kind of animated and their voice might crack, or they'll hit certain I don't want to say notes. I suppose some of them may get loud. It is notes almost, but you know what I'm talking about? And their voice will kind of crack or something like that. Putting just a little compression on the top end of that kind of prevents that from happening. You know, you've probably heard some people where they'll really get animated, and sometimes it can be distracting. Their voice will crack or it'll kind of go, and it's almost a little shrill. A little bit on the top, not a lot, just a little bit, kind of make sure that doesn't happen. It keeps it round. I'm going to do one more here. And now kind of jumping out for a second, and we're going to come to the board here. Because it's one last thing that kind of in the range of review here. Remember the hum and the buzz.
Hum and buzz are the sounds of electrical power interference with the signal. Here's an example of the sound of hum, which was created by a Brownian. This is the sound of hum, which was created by running a light cable next to a power cord. And this is the sound of buzz, which was created by orienting an electric guitar so that it would pick up lots of electrical interference from the roof's power wiring and light dimmers. Buzz has a lot of high-frequency harmonics compared to hum.
I would assume all of you have heard that many times, you know, whatever, as a kid or whatever. One thing I didn't mention the other night, and it's some new technology that's becoming more popular and more affordable.
that helps with a lot of what you just heard. Kind of fundamentally, all of those issues are related to power. And like the ground loop, sometimes it's almost nothing you can do. And remember I mentioned where like the video trucks, they would actually lift the ground, so there was no ground, it was really big, dull all the time. And you may get people to come in, you know, professional singing groups, and they'll want to lift the ground. You just want to make sure it's done all the time. I'm not recommending anyone do it. It's done all the time. It's just you definitely don't want it done by someone who doesn't lift it. There's a reason why we have ground, of course. But a lot of that, though, there's not much you can do because, you know, the buildings usually are old and who knows what the wiring is and it cross it over. And you just do the best you can. But what you can avoid is not running your power cords around your audio cables. And if you have to, cross them 90 degrees. Just that one...
I'm on the cables.
Yeah, if you have to run an audio cable over power, run it 90 degrees. And it's not exactly this, but you know, we're talking about phase. Why that works, it kind of relates to that same idea, because electricity has waves, audio has waves, and you're kind of canceling it out. It's an oversimplification, but that's basically kind of the same idea.
What is a ground loop?
Good question. It's basically just what this word says, your ground comes back onto itself. Like,
is it on the building or just the mixer? Or?
Well, I'm trying to think of a good example. Like, if you were to ground something, you'd go something metal, but if that's connected to your ground on the other side, then it's all connected. Like, if you're struck by lightning, you have a lightning rod on your building, it's supposed to go and dissipate.
To the ground.
A ground loop, it's coming back in somewhere. Again, it's kind of an oversimplification, but that's kind of what's happening, and that's why it's a little voodoo, because, you know, it could be wires in the wall, or one plug could be kind of wired wrong, or the ground is kind of almost touched, you know, it's just, it's...
So you may have dozens that you can't get rid of.
Exactly. And, well, for example, when we did our first new install at Arlington, we had all that buzz, and some kid had crawled in the attic to pull the audio snake, and he laid it over every single light can, and just taking it off that, boom, it went away. The other problem we had was we put in some dimmers. They put in little cheap ones. And so you could literally... And the audio would hear the speakers go. You'd hear the buzz go up and down depending on where I adjust the buzz. The ground loop, that's the one that's kind of the hardest. You know, the one I just described, you know, often you can kind of trace it, you know, move it away from. But even that, it literally kind of just gets into a voodoo thing and you do the best you can. However, this is where cutting corners, when I talk about don't cut corners, when you do it, you get someone in, and it's never cheap, it's rarely cheap. It consults and tells you what you need to do. That's why it's worth the money, because you'll never fix it. Even when you get someone really good, you may still have a problem, because they can't tear the building down and do it from scratch and stuff like that. But it's that thing, like the hum, the buzz. If it's not done right, you keep trying, you keep bringing people in to see if they can fix it, and the problem doesn't go away, and you have things patched on top of patches and stuff. And so you get someone that not only kind of gives the consulting, but when you put it together, when you install it, just install it cleanly, you know. It may not matter, it seems to matter that you know, I just need to connect this from the in to the out,
and technically it's been working for months or years and stuff like that. But just taking that little step longer, and it seems obvious, but just cleanly laying cables out and placing them, a lot of this stuff goes away. And there's no like scientific reason or anything. It's just because it's done carefully, you know, that it just goes away. And having a professional do it in these areas is everything. Like, for example, you can ask a consultant to come in. What I would do on a limited budget, I get with a company that can do it, like the company's coming down, but there's several that'll do this. Said, listen, I don't have the budget for you to do the full install. And I may be able to buy someone from you, but you know, we've got a church member that can get it. So what I need is a price from you to design it, and where do the cables go, and how much power I need, you know, and where it needs to be grounded, and can you install the cable? Because most of us, you know, we can take the in and put it into the in and the out to the out and all that kind of stuff. But some I've worked on, they'll do that. Now a lot of some of them won't, you know, or you got to be careful that they'll jack up the price or something. That's why you kind of shop around so you kind of know whether that's happening or not. But that is one minimum. Don't cut corners on that unless you have someone in your church that really knows how to do it. As a common problem, like a church may have an electrician. Oh, I can do that, no problem. I'll wire it. One, let's assume for a second that they're really competent. They don't understand the unique application of audio. You have to be more careful. You have to do things a little differently to make sure it's done right. And so it's okay. Some of the consultants will come in and they'll tell your electrician, be sure you do this and this and this. And of course, in those instances, make sure the electrician grasps it. Because I've had a situation where he did that, you know, the electrician, yeah, no problem. And they really didn't pay attention. And they went in and put it in like they always do, and we had problems. And so it's that basic power connection thing that will haunt you forever if it's not done right, you know? Because you can change the gear out, on so and so forth. Now, I mentioned one of the changes that's happened. One of the changes is there's basically, they're converting all your audio signal to a Cat5. You know, your Ethernet cable, like you connect into your DSL modem or something. They're converting it. And so they're converting it to a digital signal. And you can get rid of a lot of those issues. And this starts exceeding my expertise. It's just more my observation. I understand why it's less susceptible to problems, because now the signal's been changed to a digital signal. And so, because remember, the analog is literally a wave. And, you know, if you put a magnet, remember putting a magnet near a TV and it changes colors? You know, well, you put a magnet or electricity, it's going to impact that wave that's going through the audio cable, right? Well, when they convert it to digital, what's great is, one, you're sending perhaps one thin little cable from where your mixing board is all the way to the back. So that whole distance, wherever you're going, is less susceptible to all those power problems, or, you know, that cause the hum and the buzz and all this kind of stuff. And so, particularly in an older building where you really can't do much with that, by converting it to that and sending it down, not only is it less smaller cable, but then you kind of isolated it from all that, and so you know, well, it's just right here at my mixing board, and so if you still get the hum, you can have someone fix the plug. And I'll mention that in a second. And you get where the amps are and all that kind of stuff. You have them fix the power just there. So just those two areas, you know, I'm plugging in here, I'm plugging here, and let's talk about the plugs. But one of the best things you can do is isolate the plugs. by isolate, that means this plug isn't connected to the microwave in the fellowship hall. This plug goes straight back to the break. It's its own circuit. That's one way. You got an old building, you can't rewire the whole building. Say, okay, I want whatever power you determine you need. I need two new circuits that just go from the circuit board to right here. Where my speakers, where I'm plugging those in, I need those to be separate. That's one way. No matter how they've wired the building, you have a good chance of kind of cleaning it up and making some of the stuff go away. Does that make sense?
Dedicated plugs.
Dedicated plugs. Now, a standard practice, like these are supposed to be dedicated, but a standard practice is they make them orange. They're not aesthetically pleasing, but that's a standard way of saying that these are dedicated. So you know, it's particularly in an older, like a lot of the editing systems I installed in Hollywood, they were in old buildings. I mean, 40 years old or whatever, and they had all kinds of different power in there. But when they put in new plugs, they always put the orange. So there may be three plugs there, and all of them had power, but I knew this is the one I would hook the editing system in, the one that had orange plugs. You know, you can put dots or they can put other labels if it's in an area where, like, it's on your stage, your podium or you know, stage, where you see all this orange, you might want to do something different, of course. But really important that dedicated. Any questions on that? It's pretty straightforward. All right. Kind of just try to run through, review what we've come to on the audio side. Let's find out and let's take a look at the board. Okay? Say this was for educational purposes. Don't do this. You're just asking for trouble. You may have to, but I don't know how many times gone by. I think there's so many adapters or patches like this. It's like you're just asking for trouble. Someone brought this cable to me yesterday, and I was trying to do something, and I did look at it carefully. Now I understand why I wasn't liking the results. All right. This is an analog board. And what's kind of great about audio in terms of whether this is 100, you know, some big board or some small board, most of the information is the same. This one is the same as that one, that one. So if you learn this, you'll learn most of the board. And there's a lot of features on this that I can go into, but I'm not going to, because it involves a lot more complex training, and you probably won't even use most of it. Now, one of the things that's great about this particular board when it came out, this is an older board now, but this company came out with some very good sounding boards, and good sounding, pretty much the main thing was is that when you added audio, you didn't hear a lot of noise. Because as you know, in analog, the more, every time you're adding volume, sure, it gets louder, but as it gets louder, you hear more of the noise. So that's why, the less you have to put it up here, put it up there, the less you're going to be getting noise wherever, so and so forth. So you've got your gain or trim, and I'll come back and review the explanation. You have your aux area, your EQ area, your pan area, your faders, and your bus, and your main. Let's come back to the beginning. This sometimes is called gain, or trim, which is another way of talking about volume, whatever. This area here, technically, does raise the volume. But I'm suggesting think of this a little differently than just a volume adjustment. When you hook up something into this particular channel, that whatever it is, like in this case, the microphone, you set this to where the audio is coming in at a good, solid level. You're really just thinking about the quality of sound. Making, because for example, if you have, let's say you have an electric keyboard, the output of that electric keyboard, you plug it in here, may have more volume than a microphone. And so what you're trying to do is go through and make sure everything is pretty much as strong a signal as you can get in the board without distorting. And so you may put it, it seems a little loud or whatever, you might pull it back so you have a little headroom. Remember, headroom is just kind of that space to where, there's kind of a whole technical explanation, but really it boils down to there's enough space between when it's going to like either hurt your ears in digital or analog, it distorts. There's enough room so it can go up, you know, get loud, but not get too loud kind of thing. So think of this basically as getting a good, solid level. You're not trying to do anything with the sound other than making sure it's coming in solid in the board. So, for example, if I were putting a CD player into this channel, you know, I'm not going to want to see just a little single green light down here. That's not, you're going to adjust over here until you start seeing it up in here. Or you might even bring it up there. Right in there. You want a good, solid level. That's what that's for.
So if like a keyboard that's really loud and somebody's singing really quietly, would you use that to adjust to that?
That's a good question. Let's say I have a microphone with the singer and I have an electronic keyboard coming to the thing. This is what you're trying to make sure that the level from the piano and the individual is the same. And I need to qualify that. It's not like you're trying to do anything with her voice so it matches the piano. You just want to make sure that, okay, let's say her voice is coming in there. You want it to be up and around there. And when you come to the keyboard, let's say it's like way up here. You're going to bring that down. So basically it's all the same. Now, why is this important? Remember I was saying every time you raise the volume, you're adding noise into your sound, and I've seen this, I've done this myself, actually. You know, I need more level. They raise it here, you raise it there, where do I raise the volume? Just, this is where you get your original signal in, and you kind of match it up, like I just explained. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So, it's often called trim, like it is here, or it's called gain. Like, they do both here. It says trim, and then in smaller words, it says mic gain. Now, if you'll notice, it has a U here, and if you look at all these different things, it has U's. Or if you come, like on this mixer, there's a line right, on this fader, there's a line right there. Notice there's a U there. What is that? Sorry. Feedback. What does the U stand for? Unity. And what does unity mean? Basically, if you have any knob set to unity, it's not impacting the signal at all. Another way of saying it is at zero. Because some will actually put a zero there. And you're not raising or lowering the whatever's coming in. So if I had this in unity, it would not be having any impact. Whatever, if I hooked up the singer or I hooked up the piano, whatever that signal came in, and all of these were at unity, then it's not doing anything at all.
So I'll use the bottom of this thing?
What's that?
Oh, okay. Okay, so they're at the top here.
Yeah,
so
all of them.
Negative or positive.
Now, one of the things I should mention is that when you come to the board for the first time, or let's say, okay, you weren't here last week, and now you're going to be running the audio board this week. Zero your board. Now, what do I mean by that? You want everything at unity.
Okay.
So then, what you know is that, okay, I'm starting from scratch. Now, the one qualification to that, if you regularly have your piano and your singers in this, you might want to just leave your trim where they're normally set, because there's no sense going totally back to scratch. But I would recommend that you have some kind of idea where those are at. I mean, I've seen somewhere they'll actually put tape there or a little mark when they know it's set. You know, if you have different singers, that may not be a good plan, it just messes up your board. But you kind of get the idea. Have an idea where the levels are set, so you're not changing that. But all these others, set them to unity. Why is that? I don't know how many times you come into a board and you're trying to do something and it's like, I'm cranking it way up, why can't I hear them? You know, and you find down over here, they've got it switched over there. So you go through and you look at all these switches. So not only you set it to you, but there's all these little buttons in here. Yeah. Pay attention to each one all across. And let me go through them quickly. Here's a pre-fader, and I'll come back to that in a second. This is a shift button. And then this is low cut. And this is an example of some buttons you want to make sure you quote zero your board. In that, someone may turn one of these on. As a general rule, you may leave those always off because they're specific why you would do that. And then someone decides, oh, we need to, they press a button, or some little kid comes and presses it. Why does it sound so different? What happened? You know, that's what I mean by going through and checking all the switches. And when you're doing it yourself, when you're done, take a note. What does it look like? Okay, no, these aren't pressed, so and so forth. Or another example is you're trying to get some sound out, and you don't realize someone's muted that channel. Or a common one is it's soloed. And we'll review that in a second here as well. But let's look at these down here, and then I'll come back up here. The mute button. If you're getting feedback on the preacher's microphone, boom, you hit the mute. That cuts it out. It's gone. The solo, you might think, does the same thing in certain instances, but it's a little different. What the solo button does, it allows you to listen to that one channel while all the others. So given our example, there's someone singing. And let's say the electronic keyboard's coming into two different channels. And let's say the program is going on, and they're singing. If you hit solo, you can put a headphone on, and you can adjust, you know, because you're listening to it. She sounds a little nasally. I want to adjust that. You can hit the solo button, put your headphones on, and you can play with it a little bit. And people are going to still hear, you know, she's not suddenly going to disappear. You hit the mute. She disappears. That's bad.
What if you're recording?
She's there, she's gone. She's there, you know.
What if you're recording it? Does it have to cut out just her?
If you were recording it, you know, you want to watch that because you are recording if you make any changes.
Right, yeah.
But no, if you hit solo, it's not impacting. The only thing that impacts what's going out is if you make changes,
right.
which is pretty obvious. Now, notice below the solo button, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, and left and right. Let's say you have four singers and a piano player, an electronic piano. What these buttons, for example, can be four, is that you would take one singer goes in 1, 2, 3, 4. So your four singers are there. You can send all your singers to 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. So what that's doing, all of those singers are going to this bus. Okay? Now, well, how would you use that? Instead of a keyboard, let's say it's an orchestra with trumpets. So, you know, I don't care how big the venue or how small, you can start bringing in brass, they're going to have a tendency to overshadow any vocals. So you could sit here and keep raising all the vocals up, or by sending them all to this bus, now you're controlling all of the vocals at one time. You don't have to do the whole thing. Or in the illustration I've just given, you may put all the band instruments on this side and you can bring them down. Okay? So that's a basic application where you're essentially grouping things together. Okay? Because now notice that's separate from your main out. Okay? We'll come back to that. So difference between mute and solo, mute, it cuts it out. So when you get feedback or something's not right, that's your panic button. Okay?
So does this automatically turn into right and left?
Relevant question. Let me get to that in just a second. Very relevant question. Yeah.
Is this the same as that?
In the purest technical sense, yes. If you turn it, it's going to get louder. If you raise this up, it's going to get louder. But that's why, even though it technically is doing the same thing, the reason it's there, why you use it, is different. Another way to, you know, you have tires on your car. You have tires in the front, tires in the back. You know, the front of the car, the tires are supposed to roll and make the car roll, but the ones in the front are supposed to help you turn. So technically, it's the same thing, but they have a specific application. Well, in this case, this specific application for this particular volume, trim or gain, whatever you call it, is to just get the same levels of whatever you're putting in there. So you set it here. When you come down here, let's take the singers, for example. You know that they're all coming in at the same level. And so then, you can, maybe one is a little louder than the other. So you might bring that one down, and so you can move these and get a blend. Well, if these weren't set right, like if it wasn't set the same, then you're making adjustments here to compensate for this not being set the same as this one. So this particular person's voice, you get the same volume, but now you've added noise to your system because you're essentially, like you might have one singer, man, I'm all the way up here and this one's down there, that's the extreme. But that's because these aren't set the same. Let's say we have one singer here, one singer there, and let's say one of the singer's voices is kind of soft, and the other one's really boomy. That's just their natural singing. Well, the one that's boomy, you're going to turn it down, so it's not quite as loud. Because you're going to say, okay, talk for me, and when the boomy one talks, you know, they're going boom, boom, boom. So you're going to turn it down to where I'm just going to arbitrarily say, where it's kind of bouncing to round two. All right? I want to be clear, that's just arbitrary. That's not a standard or anything, just to illustrate the point. So I set it to round two. Well, then the one that's kind of soft, when she's saying she's down here, you want to adjust this to where she's up here too. So these will be dramatically different, but you've made their levels the same. Okay? So see, these should be in unity while you're doing all that. Because you don't want this change in the audio as well. You see why you want to start zero the board out? We're all in unity. Because you can see, oh, I'm fixing this. It's just perfect. Oh, man, I had the fader down. You know, that kind of thing. You know? Yeah. Been there, done that, trust me. Yeah. So this is where you get those levels same. Does that make sense? Now comes the fun part. All right, let me finish the question about the buses, and then we'll come through what each of these things do. All right, mute, panic, that's the big one when that feedback. Solo if you want to adjust. Like I was just talking about, you know, the one kind of softer singer. It's like, you know, something doesn't sound right. You can solo that person, and when we get into these buttons, you can kind of adjust it and give her
him or her a richer, bassier sound, give her a little more punch or something like that. This is where you send bus. Like, do you want to send it to 1 and 2, or do you want to send it to 3 and 4? And remember, you could group all the singers, or you could say, okay, these two singers I want to send to 1 and 2, and these two singers I want to send to 3 and 4. However you want to group, and that depends on each application. And some of it is just common sense. You say, okay, what do I kind of want to group together?
Some words have like 5 and 6.
When you get more expensive boards, the difference is the bus gets bigger. So remember when I said, you know, even though you can have a board that's this big or this small, it kind of, there's channels, there's bus, there's EQ, and there's either small or large. It just gets bigger, but it's kind of the same basic areas, okay? Alright, let's come down here. Left and right, that's where you would be sending that channel to both left and right. Like, if you were doing stereo, you wouldn't do that. See this pan button here? You send... But now, if you were doing stereo, you would have, the vocal coming in 1 and 2, and you'd send one side over that way, and one side over that way.
So if you're off, you're in stereo, right? If you don't have that button pushed in, you're in stereo?
Well, it would depend what you're doing here.
Oh, okay.
Because if these are in the center, you're sending it to left and right, essentially, which is where you want it to be. And let me talk about the stereo. Most auditoriums are not done in stereo, simply because... You know, if you're sitting on the left side, you hear the left side great, but you don't hear the right. So you just don't do stereo. And you'll encounter some problems because often, you know, your CDs are coming in and they're stereo mixed, and you kind of run into some issues with that. But as a general rule, you do not want to be running stereo.
You basically want to push all of those in, you say, then, at the bottom?
These here?
The left side.
Can
make it mono, or how do you make it mono?
Well, like right now, see, since this pan, what this does, this would send it to the left channel or to the right channel. If it's in the center, it's sending it to both.
Okay, so it's basically mono.
Right. So you don't really need to touch anything else. I'm trying to think I bet you this had, I'm pretty sure it has to do with the busing. Doing stereo busing is all that's wrong. That's like another
thing.
Yeah, so you've got left, right here, and the rings out of the. It is, but it is, you know, again, it's kind of you build on the basics and then it makes sense, but when you don't have the basics, then it's like, oh, it doesn't really work. Alright, so mute, solo, 1, 2, 3, 4, left, right. Alright, let's come back up. Let's talk about these other sections. So here was the trim. Now here's the aux section. Now, let me talk about the shift button for just a quick second. This particular board, again, when it came out, it had a good reputation for good sound quality, for a good price, and it had a lot of features for the money. So it was like a good buy for the money. And one of those features is instead, they didn't have 6 knobs for 6 different aux sends. You press this shift button, and it makes these last two now 5 and 6. So it was a way they could save costs, so charge you less, but give you aux sends. Well, what do you use aux sends for? I'll just say that, because I'm not going to go into it, but just so you're aware of it, aux sends can give you another way, like you only have 2 channels out of the board, it gives you another way if you need to be creative, where maybe you need to go out to the house, but you need to go to a tape deck, and someone brings in a video deck, and you don't have that many outs in your board. There are some ways to manipulate the auxes that might help you. I'm just going to say that so you've heard it,
but then we go back to what it's really primarily for, okay? Well, because you know, you're out in the middle of nowhere, you're an evangelistic series or something, and you got this little board, suddenly we got a DVD player, we got a PowerPoint thing, and I don't have enough outs of the board. Just know that that's where you can kind of, okay, how can I fix this? It's not how you're supposed to do it, but I can make it do it, okay? All right, the primary function for the auxes is really two things. Remember we listened to the compressor. In a board like this, since it doesn't have any effect things in it like compressor or reverb or something like that, what you have is a rack over here, that be a compressor, reverb, whatever it is. You would bring the singer in to this board, and then you come back out one of the auxes to the compressor. Then it comes back from the compressor into the board. So you could do that for each channel. So there's ways that, you know, you don't have to buy necessarily one for everybody, but that's one of the things with the digital boards, that you could have, depending on the one you get, have a compressor every channel. Well, so that means, that's one of the primary uses for the aux, is that you can send it out to what they call effects, so that be your reverb, your compressor, that type of thing. Now, you know, a lot of churches, they may not have those kind of things. The other function is, common use, is what they call front of house mix. When you're standing back in the auditorium, and, you know, hopefully you're in the center somewhere, usually it's on the side, but ideally you're in the center, that's generally referred to as a house mix. And then you'll hear of front of house mix. That's someone, like, if you go to a concert, and if, you know, it's big enough, you know, every year, you'll see someone that's up by the stage, and what they're doing is actually mixing the monitors, the singers, the musicians are listening to. That's what these boxes, well, I shouldn't say that. Often their whole board, all they're doing is mixing that, and so they might just use the whole board and not only use the boxes for effects. Well, since most churches don't have a front of house mix and a house mix, they're struggling to have a house mix. It's all done in one board. So the primary thing you would use the auxes for is to send to the monitors on the stage so that the musicians and the singers can hear themselves. Because remember, where are the speakers supposed to be placed to minimize the likelihood of feedback? In front of the microphones, right? So if I'm singing away and I'm behind the speaker, what do I sound like? I certainly don't have a very accurate picture, do I? And quite often, even that little situation of not having a proper monitor mix, you may have heard someone sing and say, wow, they sounded really great, and I went and said, man, they sounded awful. Maybe they're getting old or something. You know what I'm saying? Often, you know, maybe sometimes it is, they're getting old or something, but often the monitor mix is bad. We do a separate mix because we're doing it for the video, so we have a whole separate room. We're not even in there. And so when we solo, it's not, there's been a few times where someone's doing their monitor mix, and there's one girl in particular, she's a beautiful singer, and you'll punch her up in solo, it's like, whoa! You know, it's like, ah, man, she's normally on key and nailing it. It's the same thing, remember, if you put headphones on, and you get your kid with headphones on, they start singing away, and it sounds awful, you know. I mean, there's a variety of reasons that may be true, but you know what I'm saying? If it's too loud in the headphones, you won't be on key, you'll go flat or something, whatever. You normally go, I don't remember, sharp or flat, it's typical. Anyway, one, the function of the monitor mix is because the speakers are supposed to be in front of the singers for them to get an accurate sound of what it's sounding like up there, what the blend is. That's what the monitor mix is for. Well, and because most churches don't have the funds to have, or the peak personnel, more importantly, to run a separate mix for that, that can be done with the auxes. So let's say you're doing a rehearsal for the music. It's Friday night, we're going to do a rehearsal. Four singers are going to be practicing special music. Well, okay, you plug them each one. Remember, we've got everything zeroed out first. Plug them in. We have the first one. That one's a little weak, or that one's the strong one. This one's a little softer, so we boost it up. So make sure everyone's kind of at the same level over here, okay? Then, once you've kind of got that set, then, you know, they say, okay, we were singing to this track, so you've got the CD player, you kind of, how's that sound? Then you start going from singer to singer and ask, how's the mix, the monitor mix? So they listen to the monitors, they hear the track, and they hear themselves, and you kind of work through. You see, this is another volume control. All of these adjust. So this basically is sending more level or less level to the monitor. And you know, with this board, you may only be sending one. You know, this one could be the compressor, two to the reverb, three to something else. You know, all we're talking about is one. You know, you're just sending their voice into the monitor. And see, all of these auxes from each channel would be going into the monitors in front of them, and you can adjust the level. This, I like a little more me or a little less. And then here's another common problem, and then it relates to feedback and also the problem the singers have in terms of, you know, not hearing accurate sound, is that the monitors get too loud. And the reason that becomes a problem is that they can get so loud that if you turn the speakers facing out to the audience or the house speakers, you can still hear it sound just fine. It'd be a little muffled because it's facing the back direction. It shouldn't be that way. And one of the challenges, different musicians are going to keep asking for more of this, more of that. And sometimes, you know, if they ask for it, you kind of got to give it to them, but be at least consciously aware of sometimes when they ask, when they say, I can't hear myself, let's say you have a band, you know, the trumpets and stuff, it doesn't mean you raise them up, you bring the band down. Now, you get into a battle, well, I can't hear myself, I need it louder, and you're going to have to find that happy medium and so on and so forth. But just be aware, you don't want that monitor to get so loud that it's really contributing significantly to the overall sound.
So the monitor, the speakers that go up to the artist or the singer?
Yes.
So just so they can figure out what they're
doing. Yeah, because they're behind the speakers, they're not hearing it accurately. So you think about it, you hear these great quartets and stuff, they need to harmonize. They need to, you know, they need to hear it pretty accurate. And so I can't hear myself, so they can't tell where they're in. You know, they're just standing the mic, and so they can hear it this way, but they can't hear the blend up there. So that's the function of the monitor.
So yeah. What do monitors look like? Is it something in their ear?
That's kind of the trend. You know, the big concerts do that. Usually, they'll call it a wedge, because it literally is shaped, and it sits on the floor. And a lot of churches have those. I mean, that's not a... sometimes it's just one... What's that? And some just take regular speakers and set them down. But they often call them wedge because they're shaped kind of specially to sit on the floor and be tilted up like that. Or they just are angled up. And
for that, do we do something?
Yes.
Is that mainly just, is that mainly for singing? Or what about a preacher? And the preacher wouldn't necessarily need that.
No, you wouldn't. Voice. In fact, in some cases, it may get distracted. Because, it would be this is kind of more my subjective opinion, but it is mostly for music and that kind of thing. But also, if you're trying to connect, at least for me, if I were trying to connect with the audience, I would like to hear it a little more from that perspective. Hearing myself too present, it would be distracting to me. I don't know how you harmonize it. So. Yeah.
Pick what you get sometimes.
That I understand, yeah. No, all the time, almost, yeah. not really. Because really, when you're singing, if you're singing to a track, you need to hear the track. to know where you're at. Also, when you're blending with other, you know, to know that you're actually blending and not overpowering and stuff like that. So, let's just talk about the auxiliaries being used for the motor commands. There's another little switch here, and it's PRE. It's a little word that says P-R-E, PRE. That stands for pre-fader. If you're using it for a monitor mix, you want that always pressed. And the reason for that, what that switch does, it says, do you want this particular aspect to impact that audio signal before the fader or after the fader? If it's after the fader, that means when you raise this up, whatever your aux is, it's going to raise it up. Well, if you've set your monitor mix, and then you need more level in the house, if this is set to post-fader, or without the preset down, when you raise this up, you're raising the monitor and the house, so you're adding No. And that's a common feedback problem. We were just talking about earlier, where you be in a church and you can hear it's almost ringing. Often, that's a monitor thing. There's many ways that happens, but if there's monitors, quite often that's where it is, where it doesn't quite go into feedback, but it's just constantly, just on the edge. You know, just, you hear it, drives you nuts, because, you know, it's kind of like the piano when you don't play the next, you know, the final note of the scale. It's like, you know, it's just almost going to happen. You don't want that. You don't want this to be impacting your monitor mix. Because also, if you set your monitors to where everyone says, yeah, that's blending right, I like it, so on and so forth, if you start messing with this, you're changing it now. It's not the same. So you always want that pre-fader, and that's what the pre stands for. It means that when you do this, it's going to have no impact on what you did here. Okay?
Now, how do you really plug this stuff in before you didn't wrap something?
Yes. Back when you come back
to the room, you only need the aux things if you have extra things running in, like reverb or compression and stuff?
Or you would use it for a monitor mix. And in that case, all you're doing is you're taking an aux out from each channel and sending it to your monitor.
Okay, so you just have an out going.
You have an in and out for each aux.
Yeah. But why would you change this? Because the people can't hear it.
Well, let's say for example you have your four singers, mm-hmm. and you've come into and so those four singers coming out the main are going to go to the main house speakers, right? Yeah. Well, you also want each one of those singers to go to the monitor mix. And you want to be able to adjust the level in the monitor. That's different from the speakers up here. That's what this is for. All this is doing is adjusting the level that's going to the monitor.
Okay, so louder or softer?
Louder or softer,
yes.
Oh, yeah. The only way there would be pitch in there is that they do have hardware that they can tune people up on for singing. But that's like a whole other planet.
We're not trying to fix
them. Right. There's quite a few popular singers that, you know, they have like 2-3 of those pitch things going on all the time.
But it doesn't fix them in the monitor, so it probably does that too.
It can.
But it fixes both.
Yeah. But for our purposes, the singer goes in, you know, into the channel, and so essentially the aux, as you can see, it's a way to split, you're essentially splitting the audio. Mm-hmm. And that's why I say to be aware that you can use the auxes when you're running out of outputs. Like, you have your main to go to the house, and then someone says, well, you know, we need a DVD player. I don't have enough outs on my board. I don't know what I'm going to do. The auxes sometimes are a way to fix that problem. If you, like this here, these are your inputs for each of your channels. If you see here, this is aux send,
aux return. So like if you were sending it out to a reverb or a compressor, you'd go out to send, and then come back in the return. Mm-hmm. Make sense? So here's your pin out, pin out, pin out. Let me get to that in just a second. These here, if you see, these are direct outs. And this is another kind of good feature of this board. You could plug something into this channel and it just comes straight back out. You can loop out and go to something else, you know. I'm trying to think of an application because I've done it a few times. I'm just trying to think. I've mostly done it for an editing system where I set the level of the editing system, so I just want the sound to come in. I don't want to touch, I don't want any EQ on it. I just want to know what it is. I don't want any trim. I do that on the editing system, so it might use this go straight to the editing system. But I'm trying to think of a live application. I can't right now. So here's your aux send, which is basically an output and return. That's the common term, you know, send and return for that kind of application. You have your sub out, or that's kind of like your bus. You've got this particular one is often like a CD or something like that. You know, we use tape out. You know, some of these kind of cassette tapes are still pretty main thing. And that's one of the unique things about this board, or at least when it came out, is it had quite a few of these alternate outs. So even though you had a small board, it only had two main outs, you had all these other options. And so it meant you could hook up a CD player and get it into it, or you know, and get in and out, and all that kind of stuff. Here's your main outs. There's this kind of knob here. You can adjust kind of the like when you. Let me back up. What we haven't talked about is mic and line. And if you see, it says mic, line, and then we'll get into unbalanced. Is that my voice? Good question. Let me address the mic and line, and we'll come into that. Just to put it in the most simplistic terms, when you have a microphone, its signal is going to be generally weaker than a line. Like typically, an electronic keyboard or something is generally going to have a line out. A microphone, you know, if you know how a microphone works, literally, there's kind of a diaphragm. It mimics your ear. There's something that vibrates. And then they have condenser and all these different ways they do that. But in the most simplest sense, there's basically a diaphragm that vibrates, and it literally is creating air pressure, just like in your ear, only there's a device in there that takes that pressure and converts it to electricity. Well, a mic that's sensitive and stuff like that, whatever, typically mic level is lower. Now, you'll have a couple of options with that. There are some microphones that you can put batteries in, and so then that adds power. If you look over here, there's a switch here that says phantom on. And I'm not going to get into that a lot, other than what that's for is if you hooked in a microphone that does not have its own power, that sends power to it. Now, you have to be careful with that a little bit. Like, if you put that on and you start putting some of your effects thing and some other hardware in there, if you notice, there isn't a phantom on for every channel. It's on, or it's off. So, you kind of got to be careful about that a little bit. I know about feedback, it can burn it out. You know, if it doesn't need phantom power and you're feeding it to it
it may be more of a, you know, it'll cause someone to age more, you know, a microphone or something to age more if it's not designated. But just for all the purposes right now, there's a bunch of technical stuff in it, but no mic level is lower than line. We'll see in the video cameras there, you have for the audio mic or line as well. And it just relates to what you're coming in. And the phantom power, because that's the feed power if the microphone is there. Alright? Let's get into some of these direct in and direct outs. Now, you know, let's start with the auxiliary. Remember, there's four buttons, knobs there, and then there's the shift, which gives you 5 and 6. So as far as the auxiliaries, there's all 6 there. And you come back, and there's all 6 there. They also, if you notice, they have left and right. See right here, aux-in, bounce and bounce. I'll get the bounce and bounce here. Here's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Maybe the 4, 1, 2, 3 should be the
mono. Well, it's got a left and right or mono, which would mean you could use, you could get your 6. But normally they would label that. It's like, obviously, you only have 4 if you're doing stereo return. But I would imagine, see, if you're using it mono, then you could do your 6. And that's one of the things about this board that some of the engineers that kind of trained me on it a little bit, they kind of explained it's a great, powerful board, has a good sound, and this is kind of one of the areas, and I didn't use this area much because of how I was using the board for an editing system, but this would be an example where it gets a little confusing in that they've added all these features that bigger boards have, but it's not a big board. So then, like the returns, it's different, you know. And I don't know that for sure, but I'm pretty sure that's what's going on there. Is that to provide you with stereo in, there wasn't enough space to do all 6. If you're doing mono, then you could add the manual, I'm sure, would say, okay, this one can use the mono, which is why they put mono on the wireless. I don't know how you would determine the 6. I would assume use 1, 2, 3, 4. Like on the shift thing, they press it there and it's clearly labeled. So I'm sorry, I'm not sure. I don't use that much, but.
Well, if you don't know the number, there's
a lot. There's a lot. I don't know, trust you. let's see. What's that? Here's your subs. Which are.
Those are the two that you can switch to.
Yes. And yeah, when you're grouping it out, this insert, I'm just going to say there's a way that you could interrupt the signal, okay? Kind of the whole explanation kind of takes a whole other level, and I don't want to confuse the issue, but just kind of know that there's ways to insert the signal, and there's, right now I can't think of a specific application, because again, most of my application was for video and audio. And when we get into live stuff, we're going to do different things and stuff. Here's your main outs. And then if you're doing so you can see a left and right, but here's a mono out. And it gives you an ability to adjust the, the mic level will be like minus 2 dB, or you can set what this is. Like, when you look at the specs of the board, it will tell you what the mic level is. And remember we talked about dB a little bit. There's like this whole mathematical thing, how they come up with it. But basically, in the application, if you want to raise it, a certain amount, dB is the label you give it. I want to raise it what? 3 what? 3 dB. Like I said, there's a whole mathematical thing of how they calculate what it actually is. Well, you can set, like boards will set that the mic level is at minus 2 dB. That's what it's set at. Or they'll let you adjust it. this is a way that you're out, you can set what it is. Like it's kind of base, and it kind of deals with life and life. There's something else that I thought about. Oh, and DB, shoot, there's something I wanted to tell you about DB. We'll come back to you. I remember I forgot it the other night, too. As you can kind of see, there's a lot of stuff there. When you actually start hooking stuff up, it's a little bit like, okay, there's an in and there's an out. It isn't as quite as intimidating when you're actually working on it.
I just don't see how you can match all this stuff, because it's not, I mean, there's 16 of those, and there's like six of those.
Oh, that's right. You asked me this question. Basically, they couldn't do more than six, so you can do six direct gaps. So channels 1 through 6,
yeah.
You can do a direct gap.
Oh, okay.
So there is some connection. Now here, these auxes, you see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then you shift, and then it labels 5 and 6. So when you hit that shift, when you're adjusting this, you're no longer adjusting 3 or 4, you're adjusting 5 and 6. Well, if that's going for your monitor mix, you don't need the returns, because you're not coming back. The only reason you need the returns is if you want to send out to a compressor, so safe, or a reverb, or an effects, some kind of effects thing, all right? So for example, what you would do is you would say, okay, I'm going to have, let's assume we have a reverb unit and a compressor unit, okay? And literally, they'll just, now they're like a little box. The original reverb literally used to be a plate that was underneath the floor. It was pretty cool stuff. They would take a whole room and it would be underneath the floor here. Kind of really bizarre how they did it, yeah. Some of the old recording studios still have them, and they don't really use them, and they're kind of it's pretty cool. Well, now it's literally just a rack thing, you know, like this. One's a compressor, one's a thing, and there's some dials on it. Well, you would say, okay, I'm going to put the compressor on 1, and I'm going to put the reverb on 2. So, coming out of aux 1 here, or aux 1 here, that would go to the compressor.
Okay.
Alright? Well, basically, all the aux 1s for every single channel are going to that compressor. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Because all of these are adjusting levels for this specific channel, but it's sending it out the same place, and in this case, the same place as you want it to go to the compressor.
Right, so,
well, no, I understand why it's confusing. Let's assume this is the compressor, okay? And it can take all kinds of, you know, it's got an input coming in. And so, we decide that aux 1 is going to be the compressor. Let's assume we just have one thing like that. So, we, coming out of the sends, which is another way of saying output, that output is going to come to the compressor, and then out of the compressor is going to go back into the one on the return. Okay? Alright, so when you add a second one, let's say this is a singer, this is a male singer, and now we've got a female singer. Aux 1 for this channel is coming out aux 1.
Okay.
Every single aux 1 is going to the compressor. It's just now, okay, this is the male singer, so I want to send a little more level to the compressor for that one.
Oh.
You know?
Okay.
And now I'm going to adjust this one how much I want being compressed.
Yeah.
That's starting to make sense a little bit.
So this is the one through six is right. This isn't 1, 2, 3, 4,
no,
five, six. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Oh,
this here is 1, 2, the direct outs are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Okay.
All right? But yes, that's, you're absolutely right. So 6 is always going to this.
And if you don't want anything, like if you don't want number 2 compressed at all, then you just put it back to the unit.
Right.
Exactly. What about,
okay,
what about the 5 and 6 go? I don't understand how that works.
When you press that button down, let's say let's say this was 5 and 6. One way of doing it, you made the board bigger and you had a knob for each one.
Right.
Well, when you press that, it now changes these knobs to 5 and 6. So you can adjust it like this and this, and then take it off. And now it's 3 and 4.
Yeah, but then you just mess up 3 and 4.
The way the circuitry works, there, you know, it's there's some.
So what if, okay, I'm like, oh, well, I don't, you know, now I'm done with that. But I'm like, well, now I'm going to adjust 3 and 4. Then how does it change that?
Well, you know, that's another way.
You said Elizabeth.
That's a good. No, you know what? I maybe lead you a little stray here. I'm trying to think of how the application of this.
Yeah.
Let's say you had a compressor, you know, some other effects bar. You know, a compressor, reverb, kind of. Let's say you did have a pitch there. And that's and to get to the pitch there, that's how, you know, I'm misleading you here a little bit because the digital board I use all the time, that's what that does. And your observation is very accurate. This basically means now I can control 5 and 6. Right? Did you understand the mistake I was making there? The digital board I use, it works the way I explained it, and he's absolutely right. It's not doing that. In fact, the newer one of this does it that way too, but it's a digital board. When you press this down, this becomes 5 and 6. How would that apply? Let's say out of your auxes, you know, you have a compressor 1 through 4. You've got stuff that everybody uses. Well, there's a couple of them. And let's say there's a box that will tune someone up, you know. Let's assume someone they have a hard time staying on key, so then on their channel you're going to shift that, and so now you can use the 6th. Does that make sense?
I've got a question. What if you're using like 3 channels over? Can you just go over here and press 5 and 6, and just use these 2 channels as those 5 and 6, and unpress them?
Well, if you do 5 and 6 here, it's only for these channels. It's not impacting over here. See, with the digital board, you can patch internally and move all kinds of good stuff.
So, a digital board there?
I'll address that. It's such a broad up. I'll bring it up. Let me talk about the positive of the digital. One, the major value of digital is, if you remember like audio cassettes, you take one and you copy to the next one, it's a little lesser quality, you copy it again, you copy it again. That's the whole problem with analog. Digital, you don't have that problem. Also, you know, when we're talking about adding volume, in analog, you're adding hiss and all the stuff that
you're adding every kind of volume.
Yeah, the good volume and the bad volume. Digital, you don't have that. The other thing with digital boards is they, depending on what you have, or let's just say, for not a lot more money, when you take the digital boards, you can get into situations where, one, you can store things, you can patch things internally. Often, you can have a bigger board in a smaller space. Let's talk about the memory, for example. One of the things that you could do, let's say in your church, you have Joe, Jane, Julie, Susan, that regularly sings, but only one of them 1 week leads out the song service. In a digital board, you go in and you do all this EQ stuff, you can store that. And so when Susan comes and plays,
it'll be lazy. But it makes it fast.
Fast, it has a downside, and I'll get to that in a second. Also, you get more expensive boards, and this is an important question to ask the vendor. Because he'll be able to give you much more depth than I can, kind of the pros and cons.
And I'm not as familiar what level it takes to get some of these features. So you want to make sure that's the pricing is changing so much, and I, you know, there's this particular board I like to use, and it's on the higher end side, so we have to use it somewhere. But you can store stuff. You can also patch stuff. You know, you can send these three channels over to something else. Also, the digital boards, they'll come with sometimes compressors, reverb, or you can buy software plugins that add all kinds of features and stuff that you don't have to buy an external box. Like, for example, Yamaha, we run Yamaha boards. Another great thing is the Yamaha board we can connect up to a computer. And the one we have is called an O2R, and it's got 24 faders. But the board actually will do straight up 48 channels. And you just hit a shift button, and then those 24, it kind of does what I was saying here.
Yeah.
Those 24 faders now are something different. And when you switch between the two, using kind of like this analogy, let's say you set it there, and you press it on the digital board, it moves it to where you left it.
Right, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. In fact, I remember when I first saw that there was an Adventist guy, Martin Sound in L.A. A good friend of mine, Jeff Wood, was doing an album, and this guy was developing it, and it was the coolest thing. They had these big, you know, 2-inch tapes they're recording the audio on, and they would record, you know, the orchestra or whatever. And when that tape would rewind, all the faders would go to zero. And then when it gets to the start, when they hit play, you would see them all by themselves go and line up. It was the coolest thing. He ended up selling it to one of the big board importers. I think he bought it back. I just thought it was the coolest thing, and it was a prototype. He was a guy that funded, by the way, the Field of the Universe.
And that would be a record of all of them.
Yeah. So, he was good on that.
The DAC.
But the digital board, you know, allows you to store some of that stuff and that kind of thing. One of the things that we have at Arlington, and this isn't really a problem, probably at many churches, but I think it still applies. Let's say you have, at Arlington we have a first and a third service, and then it's quite a different singers, different people in the second service. So we have the ability to store the settings. When they rehearse Friday night for the first and third, they save the settings for that. And then for the middle service, the YG service, they save the settings for that. You have that capacity. In a different context, you know, maybe you have a Friday night guest for music and stuff like that. You can set it for one thing, and there's ways to kind of just store the board. And I'm going to use that to segue to what the downside is. Let's say, like, the O2R, one of the things, it has 24 faders, but you can do 48. If you have 24 physical faders, and it's the 25th one you need to adjust, and if you're not very experienced, it's not here. Can't find it. And it's confusing. You know, this way the digital board works. Let's say this was a digital board, because they do make one like this digital or single digit. How that would work is this one here has 16 faders. Well, depending on the model, they may say, okay, this is twice this size. So when you hit a shift button, now, this is 1 through 16, you hit the shift button, now this is 17, 18, 19, 20, 22, 23. So it means in a small board, you can, you know, have a lot more inputs. Well, the downside of that, of course, is that if it's on that second layer and something's feeding back, even the mute, you can't just mute it. Because why would it mute? It's on one. Oh no, it's on the next layer. Oh, I gotta press this button. And, you know, most churches don't have facility.
you know, even Arlington was one of the larger, we have a problem. Remember I just mentioned you could save the service? Well, that's great. Except if someone saves over their service. So you, and it isn't something you just do simply. And one, a lot of, you know, very talented audio engineers, they don't like digital boards because they don't like the sound. And so my application is more a function. Because I know the sound is, there's a quality, they're talking about a subjective thing. I mean, you know, some people like classical music, some like, you know, Gregorian chants or whatever it is, you know. That's a subjective style thing. Well, the digital board versus an analog board, that's that. Most people say, I can hear the sound good, and are the singers good, or is the violinist good? That's all that matters. So for me, it's a function, functionality issue. Because, you know, most people aren't going to say, they wouldn't even know if it's on a digital or analog board. But most will say they like analog. Now, one of the reasons they will say that is that you have one fader and one jump. And there's a lot to be said about that. In the case of Arlington, one of the things we hadn't done until we're starting to do it now is really had it set up with procedures. It's like you could save these whole complex settings and the board has reverb and compression. And you can save, I forget how many layers, well, you solve the problem by saving it way down in some people's layer, so someone actually can hit the save button. But if you don't feel like you can create some kind of systematic, it doesn't have to be complicated. The digital board can bite you a little bit. However, when you get into some of the feedback, or hum, the buzz thing, the digital board, can benefit you. Also, like in our O2R, you were asking about monitors. One of the best ways to monitor is actually in ear, where all the musicians, except for like keyboards and stuff like that, they have it in ear. And with the digital board, you can do this on this as well, but with a lot of the digital boards, there's just a card you put in, control all those, and it's really cool. I just mentioned it to where it's probably the seat most budget. I mean, we're just slowly coming up, but it's not cheap. And a lot of musicians don't like it. So if you get it, it's going to be something that you need and all that kind of stuff.
So if you have a monitor, it's going to be on board.
If you look at almost any concert, I don't care what you're using, you know, it's the guy. Churches, the big mega churches, you'll see that they're doing that. But most of our churches, I mean, it's a great thing to have for a big, but if you don't really have the people who know how to use it, and the audience, it's kind of one of those cool techniques. I mean, it has a great function, but if you don't know how to use it, people don't want to use it. And, you know, it's just some technology stuff. The digital board is one of the upsides that I miss is it, because of the effects and stuff built into it, it can be a cheaper way to go because you don't have to buy all this stuff. But just because all those features are built into it, it means it's more complex to kind of drill down and then you can find it. You know, so you kind of get the sense of the pro and con of that. I still think it's a good idea for function reasons to move towards digital board. And you know, if you only need 12, 15 channels, you know, in a second layer, then that whole double layer can be And if the board does have all these little effects built into it, you can at least tell people don't go into this area, don't touch. At least do that. Because even when we get, if you asked me about teaching about specific reverb and all that kind of stuff, I wouldn't touch it. I'd be
So when you talk about different channels, that's just the 1 through 16 then, different mics down here?
Ask your question again.
When you talk about a different channels, that's just the 1 through 16, the different mics down here?
Yeah, whatever board you're using, in this case, it's a 16 channel board.
Yeah.
So it could be mics, it could be an electronic keyboard, it could be a CD player, and you know, down here, you can label that. So
what does that low cut button do? I don't think
it kind of does, it actually cuts the sound. Mm-hmm. You know, to be honest with you, I don't fully grasp all of its thing, other than it does exactly what it says it does. It cuts the low, cuts it off. I'm sure a regular engineer could give you a much more complicated explanation than that, but it's kind of one of those, you just cuts the low
frequency. The low frequency or the low?
And let me see if it actually makes, it does say 78. 18, it has a specific, it's 75 hertz and 18 dB. So that, it actually is cutting a specific amount.
Is that because it might be, how long it is in
that? That, actually, that could be one. I'm looking at the frequencies here. Like the bigger boards, there'll be, I think, two more knobs here. I think what they're doing here is because they didn't have space for another knob. Instead of even having a knob there, you just press it and it does it. And to be honest with you, I don't know this for sure, but just logically and what the frequency it says there, that's what I would presume to do, just do this. Let's see. Is that clear as mud?
Yes.
No,
it's bigger than mud.
Only over a thousand and thousand. That's why I'm hanging my head.
Just right in front of the speaker.
Right, and so he wasn't far enough away from the speaker to be in front of it.
Yeah, he was like right there, so.
Yeah.
Well, that is a good way to learn what not to do.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, just kind of keep talking for me.
Hello, welcome to the Southwestern Adventist University Biltmore Shop. How to put pastors on TV and the radio. Probably you can hear a lot of difference in that.
That's right. Oh, that's a big difference. Between what you had a minute ago and what you have now.
And I can't think of anything else to say, so does anybody else have any?
Bottom line,
welcome to
take the time to do that. All I'm doing is messing with the EQ. Because in the end, I can give you all kinds of theory about it. But just start hearing how, okay, and it started sounding bassier, and then it's like bassy money, and then it started getting clearer, and then nasally, and all that kind of stuff. And that's where, like, the soloing out, you can kind of hear it isolated out.
And so here's where you do your mic check before the pastor goes up and actually speaks to the people.
Yeah, you know, fortunately for speaking, get away with a lot.
Yeah.
But there is a pastor, a friend of mine that I really like, who was in college, and he did not have a good speaking voice. Mm-hmm. He was very high, and he was weird. It's a little dicey because to make him sound good, you make him sound like he's not. But he's not. But like, I would probably have still EQ'd his voice to take out. He had kind of S's, and it was way up here. Not, it wasn't constricted, but it was really high, you know. And when he'd get excited, and somehow back there, he was way up, you know, going high.
So what do you do for someone like that if you want to put the audio onto a video or something? And you don't want them to sound really bad.
Just, it's one of those risky things. That, you know, if you put it out there and then they ask them to speak and they don't sound like they're here, that's a problem. So they just try to make them sound the best they can without making them sound like somebody else. That's what I do. If they never plan to travel anywhere, never ever see you, then that's a different story. Oh, man. There's a question about balance and unbalance. I'm going to address that. We're going to try and get some shooting in a little later in there before we come off the title. If you look at this, I'm going to try and remember to ask the guy coming tomorrow because it'll give you a more useful explanation. Mine is very thin, but I do know basically if the term is in peaks, if you want to ask me what in peaks is, you can. It's one of those things where I know when I flip the light switch on, if it's connected right or work, and you need a positive or negative, I know what impedance in that context is. And when the impedance in these two is the same, we're balanced. And in this case, it can be balanced because it has a third one, and the ground is going down the third pin. There's your standard RCA cable. It's unbalanced because you only have the center pin on the outside. One's ground, one's the signal, and so it's unbalanced. Okay? In the most practical sense, balanced is better. And I don't know for sure, but if I had to guess, the problem you're having with your laptop is probably a balance. But definitely ask them. But that's, balanced is less ideal. You're more likely to get hung and stuff like that because, you know, electricity moves in waves. The audio is moving in waves. And basically, you're starting interacting. Like if the shielding, the power's going down, and some of that leaks through, it impacts your sound. And so you've got, remember when we played those harmonics the other night, and it beat, and that's an example where the waves are intersecting, and how they intersect create the sound. Remember when I did this? Play this sound, and then play this sound with it, and then that is just an illustration of how the waves interact and cause something else. Well, basically, the electricity and all that interconnection can cause the bugs. So, hopefully that's helpful. I've asked that question several times. That's good answers I've gotten. Let's do a little. We'll do a quick shoot here. Which camera are we going to use, guys? That one. Let's go ahead and lower it down. Let's shoot one of these guys. We'll do an interview. We'll just use the camera mic. We're not going to take that. Yeah. 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 Jared, why don't you move your desk further up the stairs there? Karen, let's just get a decent, just scoot back there, and we're going to do an interview with you. Oh,
man.
You're the man, the legend, the man.
Right next to the ladder.
The myth is that I'm actually going to be.
All right.
I'm going to get Casey over here.
I already did this for a previous session.
Yeah, you're still in school.
Yeah, we can move to some...
You know what? Why don't we do that in case we have time to play with it? Let's put him in front of the question. Let's. We may not have time to do it, but yeah.
What is the RCA stand for that you say the RCA cable?
What does RCA stand for? It's actually because it was developed by RCA. Remember old RCA? That's the design.
Thank you.
Now, where RCA came from, I don't know.
Are you gonna,
it's kind of interesting, you go back some of those, it's like, I didn't know that.
Port with Radio Corporation of America.
Yes.
Is
it
Radio
Corporation of America? Yeah. You're right. Hear that, guys? Radio Corporation of America.
Here we go.
Hey,
should we, this might be...
Well, they're setting up. Remember how I was kind of talking about the other day where you ask someone for a simple explanation and, you know, they, one of my theories is just because they've always learned by observation, not really why they want to do it. Well, a classic example is in the video world, I think I was explaining a time ago, our video now with color is not, it's not running 30 frames per second, it's running 29.97. So engineers I've worked with for 20 years, can't tell me why that was. The best engineers I hire for everything, they couldn't tell me what that was. So obviously I was feeling kind of proud when I'd say, this is what, it's like the one technical thing I knew that they did. So, a lot of good it did me, but... a couple of things. Aaron, I'm gonna talk through some things, and if you can kind of hear me, what I'm saying. No, let's just use the camera mic.
Yeah.
We're gonna do something you shouldn't do, but for
like, well, what if we just grab this off the?
If yes, we can make it work.
Yeah,
all that audio cable was in the best condition. Oh yeah. Okay.
Yes. Oh, lock. Focus? No. Still attached to the gun.
One of the things you always want to do, in a lot of your consumer cameras, you probably want a white balance. I'm not going to go into all the details how you do it on this particular camera, just because every camera does it somewhere different. Bottom line is you would point your camera to something that's white, and you make sure the whole frame is full of that. All you're doing is saying, in this lighting condition, this is what white looks like. And so that can prevent your camera looking blue or too red, or, you know, depending on whether you're indoors or outdoors.
Eric, can you talk to the microphone?
No, yes, we can hear you.
Now, if you guys look at the screen here, go ahead and talk for me, Jared. This particular one in the screen, see, it has the level there. Now, if you come around front here, this particular camera, because it has the balanced audio plugs, notice in the front here it has mic and line switch. If I switch that to line, or depending on what it is, you can see the audio level there, but it would be overdriving because it's too powerful. Like if you're feeding a line level into, and this is flipped on mic, it's going to be too much. So that's why you always want to have headphones as well. So you can actually.
What if you have an adapter? Like, let's say you have the XLR and you want to put it to RCA. You have to have, I mean, you buy an adapter,
right?
But does that switch it from balance to unbalance? So much?
That's a dicey thing to do. Sometimes you have to do that.
Yeah.
But that's where you introduce common problems. You want to avoid that if you can. But yes, you can technically do that. And it does do that.
But the common problems that be fixed by the balance and unbalance thing?
No, because it's really the cable, you know, how it, what it is, it's basically the interaction between the power that's going down mm-hmm. and the audio signal that's going down. And so, you know, you it could be right here where the hump is being caused because this was kinked mm-hmm. and broken. You know, that's another thing here. If you have, you know, you get some people, like, there's a guy I've worked with quite a bit that, you know, I don't use him much anymore. You know, he did build stuff, but then I noticed his cables, he could build them. But, you know, the gentleman that was in here, Carl, he's with Sonars Unlimited, and he has a guy working with him, Scott Brady, when he builds his cables. He's very careful. And they just don't, you know, I haven't had any problem with them. But this other one, it's like, this is a, it's kind of soldered on here weird. And, you know, I'm not a solderer and like, with the guy, you know, I just kind of use the stuff. And so stuff like that, if someone doesn't do it right, you know, again, you know, oh, this is a brand new cable, you get a pump, and he's like, well, let me switch cables in. Well, what do I
do? All right. Open question.
Yes.
The reason I brought it up is because my brother has a just a little video camera, and for it, and he wants to put the audio for the mixing board into that. Mm-hmm. So we probably do a good XLR from the board into this camera, which does have an XLR.
Well, you might want to check, like, even this board has an LCD camera. Has a tape out. Probably your small board is still have a tape out because you won't have one. You want to avoid the adaptive thing, whether it's video or
yeah, video.
Oh, where was it? Was it? Did you guys remember any of this? Yeah. We had a situation where we thought we were going to have like five adapters
yeah.
to get where we wanted to be. It was, in fact, I think it was going to be for this class. And it's a guy, we're all laughing, saying, like, wow, this is going to make a great impression. This is how you don't do it. You know? That's what was in this class. Oh, it was out of the computer, wasn't it? Anyway. It's done all the time. All right.
yeah, there you go.
Let me just talk about some of the basics. When you're doing it, and taking some, like we showed you, do the white balance. Even your cheapest camera will have some form of doing that. They might just flip to indoor, outdoor. But what you want to do is get some kind of idea of what white is in this color situation. Focus. Always, like if you're doing an interview with, you know, someone, always focus right about there. That's where you want it. Now, if you're going to do a thing on shoot an individual, unless you deliberately have a reason for it, you don't want them looking straight into the lens. Sorry. You think about it, when someone's looking straight in the lens, that's a whole lot different than if they're, you know, like you see a documentary or 60 Minutes or something like that. They don't, if they look into the camera, especially if they're not looking, they look in, you know, oh, now they're looking at me. There's just that psychological thing. So what you want to do is you look slightly, oh, like if you were doing the thing,
you wait a minute.
You don't want it too far off the camera because you'll get some people to do an interview and they'll have it over here. And why is that a problem? Look right here, Barry. Look in the monitor there. You're in the profile.
Yeah.
Almost. That's not good. I mean, even if you have the best profile, well, you have a good profile. Yeah, right? you know what I'm saying? So the ideal is where you still can see a little bit of the eye over here, and then, you know, but they're just slightly off, so they're not looking straight at. So here's straight at. See the difference when you're looking at the screen. I'm looking straight at versus this. Looking straight at versus this. You know, just that little bit. Like, one of the problems you can have sometimes, if you're in a small room, you're doing an interview, you can't be far enough away. And some people have a tendency to talk this way a little bit. They'll be looking at you, and they'll do this, and
You got to stop it because people, it won't, it doesn't play well. Another thing, compositionally wise, I don't like to be too far away. I like, you've got your medium shot, your medium close-up, and then extreme close-up. I'm not a big fan of extreme close-up, but right in here, and this is relevant to where if you have a testimony from one of your members or something like that. Like you saw that one, I played at the YG, that girl talking and stuff like that. Like I said, it was practically in a closet, just looking slightly off. And often what I'll do, the other thing is you want to make sure, we're pretty close, yeah. You want to be careful what the eye line of the camera is. In other words, if you're up, it's the classic thing, if you go into a job interview and they're sitting at the big desk and you're sitting in a low chair, it's gonna, the camera will do the same thing. You know, so the viewer feels like, okay, you're looking over me. And then the reverse is true. If you go too low, then the person on the camera, if you pay attention to TV news, you'll notice that generally if they have it set right, it's just barely below. So they're just barely looking down at you, not enough to where they're looking down at you. Okay? So just a couple of tips in there. So have it look slightly off. If you have a lapel mic, which we don't hear, you'd want to put the lapel mic on the side that they're facing. Something like that. And now for our next act. Nothing up my sleeve. All right, let's go ahead and... yes?
You said, now, I mean, when you say don't look at the camera, is that when you're actually talking to the camera, you're not supposed to...
If it depends what you're trying to do, like
yeah.
A testimony thing, like I said, it's generally not a good idea to have them look
yeah.
straight in the camera. But if you notice that little piece that I showed you with the iPhone, he was directly addressing the camera, the audience, and it was up on a screen, and so we wanted him to look in the camera, because if you remember, he'd say, right here on this stage, and he'd look down the stage. We want him to feel like he was up there. That was an intentional. Or you're making an announcement, hey, you know, we're going to do this great thing, and you want to address him. Or Greg Batlos with the YG shirt, sometimes he's gone to like a mission trip or something, and he did this once where he went on a mission trip. He couldn't be at the church, so he shot this video that was kind of like, hey, I'm coming to you live. Well, in actual fact, he went down to Cleburne, shot it from some wall 2 weeks before he left, right? And then when he was down there, they played it like we were satelliting it, you know? And it played off pretty good. And, of course, he came back, and I think he had a sermon next week, and he said, well, I really wasn't there, but, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was kind of a nice touch. Now, that's, I digress, but there are specific reasons you want to look straight in the camera. But a lot of the testimony things, you don't. And it's a common mistake. I see people do that. If, unless there's a deliberate reason you want it to look in the camera, don't.
I'm intimidated if you just look in there. Like, I'm actually going to tell people what, you know, my Christian life is like.
I don't want you to know.
Well, and it, you know, even when you have a regular conversation, if someone's staring at you the whole time, there comes a point where... You know, you're going to look away. It's like, come on. Hey, now. It gets a little freaky here, you know. So, anyway. Yes?
So, like on TV news where they're talking to whoever, do they look in the camera?
That's a good question. On the news when they're reporting, notice they're looking straight in the camera because they are talking straight in the camera. You know, the news today, we were telling you about this, but then when they have an interview, it's different, you know. You kind of watch the news and you can see when it's right and when it's not. You kind of see the differences.
Yeah. If they are reading, is this and that?
Teleprompter.
Yeah, they are reading.
Yeah. Yeah, there's this one guy I work with and he reads exactly what's on the teleprompter. Think of the fun you can have with that. We did that to Mike, Pastor Mike once, where I forget what we put in there. But I think it was during one of the elections or something. We made him say some Republican or Democrat, I don't remember which.
mentioned last. It was contrary to what he wanted to say. And he was just reading along, and you know, there's all the studio crew, and it's rolling along. And in fact, I think it was one of those early ones we did out in California. I think it was out in California. So he hadn't done this, you know, it was kind of a big deal. And so he's all stressed out. So he's really intense and serious. So he's watching it going along, and he's reading it, you know, really. And just then he pauses and realizes what he just said. And of course, it was great fun at his expense. So.
Did he start laughing?
He did, actually. All right. There is one guy. I haven't worked with him very much, but he literally needs executives there. And I don't recommend it. I mean, he's really not totally. He does a great job reading whatever's there, but he's the kind of person that could go all the way through it and not realize what he said. That's not ideal. All right. Hey, throw it. Throw it down. All right, Jared, tell us where you were born.
Well, Stu, I was born in Eureka, Kansas, a place that has many sandwiches of all kinds.
Really?
Absolutely. In fact, I'm here with Casey Lopez, and he actually wanted me to taste one of his famous sandwiches. It's a grilled cheese with pickle and ham inside. Absolutely. That's actually what they do in San Antonio, too.
Oh, okay. All right. All right, now we've kind of gone back and forth. Look right here. Stay looking right here. Tell me a little bit about what your experience is, what you like about Eureka.
Well, Eureka, Kansas is a very small town, and less than 1,500 followers. And a lot of my love born there. And my grandmother's there, and my aunt, my favorite cousin, used to be favorite cousin, lives there. used to live there. Used to be favorite cousin, used to live there. So I guess that's why I like Eureka, Kansas, especially.
It's not cake. Now, ordinarily, now that Utah is, so why is the cake cousin my favorite cousin? Yeah. All right, let's get into the things we get into.
You want to take two of them on camera?
We'll take it in there and I'll show you what. We went to Pichu first, right?
You want me to bring the microphone?
We don't need to.
If that's open and aimed towards you, then this is black. But it's closed, you can see through. Watch. But if it looks through here, you see that. Now, the other thing is, if you have it going that way so they can see themselves and line themselves up, you can still see something. Oh, okay.
All right, let's go in the room and bring the fireworks and we'll have to dry it.
Okay. You're going to give me the battery here because it has no power source for the wall.
Yeah.
So what all did you hook up?
All we hooked up was basically the microphone. That other hard drive and stuff is
and then you're saying something about your you use the camera mic?
We ended up not. See the mic on the top there, that's the camera mic. You generally don't want to do that if you can avoid it.
So you pretty much need a mic. So in addition to the camera, you need a microphone on the board. Okay.
Now a lot of the YouTube stuff, they do it without that. It's done all the time. The problem, that mic is designed to kind of gather the air in the room, and you'll hear all of it in the noise. If you know, you have a microphone right up